Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl.
Hey, Fred.
Yeah, it's been a little while. You've been busy and traveling and doing all kinds of stuff. Are you learning anything out there?
I'm having just a great time and learning a lot. This is something I talk over with when I'm with clients on site, is that I'm not coming into a company saying I know everything. I mean, I have some expertise and some experience and that type of thing, but I'm still learning. And I encourage everybody that I'm working with to have that type of attitude, which is no matter how good you are at something, you can get better in applications. You may understand the theory, but the applications are various and challenging. And so, yeah, I'm in continue to be enjoying the learning mode.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I've occasionally run into a client that they said, well, we hired you. We want your answers. And I don't have any answers. You want me to tell you how to weld titanium? I'm not a welder. I'm not a metallurgist. Why did you hire me? If you want to learn about how to assess the risk of that, or where the issues are, or how to corral the expertise you got in your room, well, then I can help you with that.
Right.
But I'm not going to tell you the merits of TIG welding versus anything else. I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, no, that happens. That happens. But the ones I like the most, though, Carl, is when you get to a client and they already have a pretty good act, right? They already have a program. They're doing their good stuff. But then they go, how can we get a little better at this? How can we get to the essence of, like, the FMEA stuff, which I know you love talking about? You know, how do we get to the essence, the gem part of the FMEA without it taking all day?
Exactly. And I would love to chat with you about that, Fred. Let's explore that a little bit. The one of the learnings on FMEA is it can take a long time to do it.
Well, no.
But it doesn't have to.
No, and I vehemently disagree with that. It should not take a long time
right.
when you do it well. No.
Yep.
The part I don't like is, the very first class I taught for University of Maryland was with the Naval Aviation Reliability Group, right? And it was on their site, or actually at a hotel near their post, their base. And at lunch one day, one guy walked in with a manila envelope that was about an inch thick. And he goes, oh, I finally got it. This is the FMEA for the left wing structure of XYZ plane program. I said, just the left structure? And it's an inch thick.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, well, how many pages of that are you actually going to look at? And he goes, well, just the first one. Then mm-hmm. what do you need an inch thick document for? Well, they have to
right.
check every rivet. They have to check every joint, every panel and stress. And for what? You know?
Yeah.
How many ways can a rivet fail?
I've seen an FMEA that is over 1,000 pages long.
And why?
It has absolutely no value. In fact, it's negative value because people get frustrated and so the learning here is we should be able to do FMEAs in a fairly quick amount of time, and they should not be arduous, taking forever. And there are certain techniques to bring that about. And that's one of the things I wanted to explore with you is these techniques. I have a four-slide presentation, or basically four slides, which I can put on the show notes, of techniques to reduce the time in FMEAs.
Them's got to be is corral your engineers from trying to solve the very first issue that comes up. You know, as soon as somebody says, oh, the seal could fail, and then three engineers are going to jump up to the whiteboard and draw a redesigned seal and new polymer
yes.
techniques. And
yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. We're not solving problems here. Let's not
right,
do that.
Right. Yeah, and of course, good facilitation skills are very key, and that's one of the topics is that when I teach facilitation with students and companies, the number one skill to work on that people are really interested in is controlling discussion, and that's the because engineers get passionate, yeah. and they want to go off into various discussions, and you have to be able to control that and stay on topic, understand what you're looking for in an FMEA, and keep it moving.
Well, you know, control's probably not the right word. Corral is probably not the right word. Because part of the FMEA, and I hope you agree with me, Carl, is that it has to be safe to say it's a brainstorming activity at the heart of it, right? It's, well, what comes to mind? What are the associations? What are how do we pull up our experience and make connections and learn something through this process and teach each other? And that brainstorming process has got to be safe. So you got to feel safe of what you're saying or be able to say something. And yes, I agree that there's a natural tendency. Every single engineering team I've ever worked with is at some point they all go, oh, I know how to solve that. And that's the facilitation saying, well, here's our boundaries. This is what we agreed on, what we're talking about in this session. And the focus is trying to get to what are the top issues, what are the highest risk areas. And, you know, we could cancel that and go work on this problem, but it may not be the right problem to solve, right? I do something like that and try to set the boundaries up front. But that's only one issue, though. Right. Then there's the other issue where there's the dominant player that just says, oh, we don't need to do this. I know exactly how to solve this and shuts down everybody else. Or another person that just has running at the mouth and is constantly interrupting and talking over everybody else and shutting down other people that have really good ideas, but they're not allowed to talk. So this facilitation thing is absolutely vital, and it's not a trivial task.
You're totally right. And controlling is probably too strong of a word, or it gives the wrong implication. Because you want to excite people, you want to stimulate, you want to get the right discussions, but you can't let the extroverts dominate. You have to draw out the introverts, and you have to keep a balanced discussion, mm-hmm. and you have to stay on topic, and you don't want the long war stories, and you don't want to go down rabbit holes. So there's a lot to that. So there's a whole subject of facilitation skills that's very important in terms of getting better results in less time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's like one of the slides that I'll post has to do with the facilitation skills. Another one that I've been learning more and more about the last few years is prioritizing what you work on in an FMEA. One of the early columns in an FMEA, as you know, is functions.
Right.
There can be a lot of functions in a complex system. Not all of them need an FMEA.
Right.
And so the functions can be basic functions. They can be interface functions. The whole point there is if you start your FMEA on low risk functions or low priority, I'll call them functions.
Oh, man, you drag it out.
You're just grinding and people are, you know, tuning out. But if you can extract from the team or as part of preparation, the ones they're most interested in, the ones that have the most risk, the ones that have the most new technology or field history problems
or uncertainty.
Changes in design. They're just going to rally around it and be involved and frankly, very excited and interested in the FMEA. So I think prioritizing functions and keeping the team focused on the highest priorities, at least first, if not entirely, is one of the techniques to get more done in less time.
Well, you listed off a bunch of what I consider those red flags for attention, right? It's a new vendor, a new process, a new facility, a new technology, a new material, pretty much anything new. Or it's something we don't have experience with, something unknown, which often is new. But it's one of those things where what I find in that process, though, yes, you can get a lot of attention and you get traction on it. Yet it's, and you've seen it, Carl, is it's the, oh, we're going to put 2 more watts into this power supply and it's, it shouldn't be a big deal. It's got, you know, whatever. And that's the issue. It just pushes that margin just a little bit too far. And it's one of those afterthought type issues that, oh, we've put capacitors on our boards for decades. We've used lots of capacitors. It's never been an issue. And then they have a class recall due to capacitors. You know?
Right.
There's a balance, I think. And I agree that getting started with one where the energy is, but then looking for those elements that are, well, what did we change subtly that's just an incremental step towards the margins? Is that erosion of margins a problem? The hard part is making that exciting because nobody wants to talk about power supplies unless that's what you do. And nobody wants to talk about capacitors or connectors, things like that.
Right.
But those are the things that fail. It's not the sexy thing that we all pay attention to, right? It's those auxiliary things that sneak up and catch us.
Absolutely correct. So another narrow down is what I call in my book, I call it preliminary risk assessment in Chapter 4. Mm-hmm. And a lot of systems, complex systems, can have hundreds, sometimes thousands of parts. That does not mean that you need to do hundreds of FMEAs.
Right.
And so you can narrow down fairly quickly with preliminary risk assessment from your system hierarchy or your bill of materials. You may only need a small number of FMEAs to do a really good job. I would rather do fewer FMEAs well than more FMEAs, but you don't have time to do them well.
Yeah. Well, there's a concept, and I probably learned it from you at some point. I'm sure I did. Of nesting the FMEAs. So, like, if I look at a car, this is, I keep thinking of that example. So, this is probably because I learned it from you. Is you look at the overall system and go, well, what's the highest? Let's do a system level FMEA, and it's high level. But the purpose is to figure out, well, which of these subsystems do we need to do further investigation on or focus on? And then instead of 15 different subsystems on your list to follow up on, you might end up with 1 or 2. And then go focus on those in more detail. And then it may lead to, well, here's a key supplier for this powertrain system that we need to understand their manufacturing variability. And then that leads to a third FMEA. But done well, and you end up doing 3 to 5 FMEAs versus 50.
Right. No, it makes sense. And so that is one of the purposes of system FMEA. Of course, there's other purposes because there's the interfaces are often get tackled in the system FMEA, and so many problems occur at the interfaces. But that you're right. That's a way to narrow it down. And I always like to start with a system FMEA. Another one, I'm just reflecting on some of the big hitter reasons why meetings take a long time, that type of thing. Another one is if the team doesn't fully understand the definitions and concepts of FMEA. I try to start by making sure the team, maybe an 1 hour overview with the team of here's the definitions, here's the concepts, here's the procedure, so that we don't have people answering effects for causes and functions for failure modes and things like that.
Yeah. I see, that's an hour. I try to get that out of the meeting. You know, if I could go to what we did at HP is we had a basic training of FMEA. It was an online process, and it gave you the basic definitions, basic workflow. They got a copy of the McDermott book on, I think it's Basics of FMEA or something like that. It's a really small little book, but it became, it's just a resource for here's the chart, here's the process flow, here's the definitions. And what I found is that less than half would typically ever pay attention to the pre-work, which is probably why you do the lesson right at the start. But what I found is that the folks, the expectation was that you would come prepared. And those that didn't think they had time for it would tend to become silent, quick learners and follow the lead of the other group that knew what they were doing. And so it didn't matter whether we did training for a day and then we did a practice one or we did the pre-work or whatever, failure modes and failure mechanisms almost always get confused. So there's a balance. There's on-the-spot training. And I think a good facilitator doesn't launch into a two-hour lecture on the philosophy of FMEAs to solve a quick definition. You just define and move on.
Very good. Very good. So yeah, the more you can do out of session, the more you can do outside of meetings, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you want to respect and honor the time commitment that people have. So you're bringing together subject matter experts, and anything that drags out a meeting has got to be resolved, yeah, addressed.
Yeah. You know, and it's the purpose of being in the room together isn't for them to learn the process or to corral one person. It's really to get that combined energy together, that the brainstorming right. part again, right? And the more time you spend doing that part of it, when you're in the room together, the better.
And the better.
You know, that's all good. Now, how about an idea for shortening an FMEA? So you get to an impasse and you go, you know, this isn't the right tool for right now. We need to go do an experiment or an investigation. We need to go, let's end the meeting and go do that. And have you ever done
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Yes, I have. There are times when we had to shift to a fault tree, or there's times when we needed to do an investigation or even a quick experiment. And I would rather do that than spend the time grinding in a meeting where you don't have the right information right. in the room.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. You need to know when to take a break, when to go off and do something else. There are sometimes when there's some administration that can be done by one person, and you say, okay, let's come back at 2 o'clock or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'll give an example. I'll often start an FMEA with the yellow sticky notes
yep.
and hand out a pad to everybody and say, write down your concerns about the widget, one concern per yellow sticky. And then we'll get those up on a wall. Then we might take a break and somebody can organize that as some of these are failure modes, some of them are effects, some of them are whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the work in the FMEA can be summarized in those areas of concern and speed up the process tremendously. And also helps you make sure you're not missing anything important.
Well, do you do that silently, where people write their own ideas on their own?
I started out that way.
Yeah.
And then we take them up.
And then we take them up and share them. Mm-hmm. And then and I find that you get a pretty wide spread of ideas when you do that, which is great. But it does need some sorting. I tend to use affinity mapping, where you get the whole group to group them. And then we do basically after that, we might end up with 10 or 15 different groups of sorts. And then we say, all right, let's prioritize these. We're not going to get to them all. And then we
right.
either multi-voting or it's obvious where everybody had the same concern. Right. Let's work on that. So,
yeah. No. Good ideas. The another one that I use is I call areas of concern. If somebody brings something up, the example I use in training is a tiger could walk through the room and stomp on your laser pen. And maybe you're doing an FME and a laser pen.
Mm-hmm.
And it is possible
yeah.
that a tiger could come through and stomp on it. Do we want to include that in the FMEA? And the answer is no. We're not really designing it for that. The point being is that if nobody in a properly constituted FMEA team is concerned about something, and it's very key that not one person, then I'm not going to take it up in the FMEA.
Yep.
I don't want to explore purely theoretical things that have never happened, that nobody's concerned about from an academic standpoint.
Well, yeah, a meteor striking the building and wiping out your laser pen.
Yeah.
You know? Well, yeah. We're not designing a laser pen to withstand a meteor strike, you know.
Exactly, exactly. So, because every once in a while you'll get somebody in a meeting that is just throwing things out. Well, what if this happens? What if this happens? And I go, is anybody here concerned about that? Now, I don't vote on it because sometimes one person
yeah.
might be concerned, and they might be right.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'll explore it. If anybody is concerned about it, let's bring it up.
So yeah. You know, it's a balance there. That's, again, back to that facilitation thing. Because sometimes those wacky ideas spark a whole train of thought. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. We got to concern ourselves with how insects affect our product.
Right.
You know, our vent. What's our vent size on that? Oh, man, that's going to be a problem. You know, and now we're off onto something useful. Whereas, mm-hmm. The wacky idea of being, well, it could become a nest for small animals. And then it goes off to, you know, something that, oh, now we're losing our cooling capability because we have the debris and insects getting into it.
Absolutely correct. The whole subject of stimulating and brainstorming, you come up with, in brainstorming, you come up with a lot of wacky ideas. Mm-hmm. And then now, once you're done brainstorming, and I try to pay attention to this, is we're not always in brainstorming mode. There, you brainstorm to get that flow of ideas, but then you say, okay, now let's critique.
Yeah, let's sort it out. And
let's sort out and see which ones we really care about.
Yeah, and that's a good phrase is, you know, is anybody really concerned about this? Is this an issue? And what I've run into is people say, you know, that could happen. The probability is so low that we're not going to worry about it. You know,
I'm still learning on this and I'm honing these techniques, but I find if I use the techniques that we're talking about, where we prioritize which FMEAs, we prioritize the functions, we stay focused on areas of concern, we use a lot of brainstorming, but they narrow down with critique and keep people interested and engaged and don't let anybody dominate and do those type of things, FMEAs can go really well, get lots of great things done, and they don't take a lot of time. So I'm just sharing ideas with people.
Yeah.
And be really interested in anybody else. So if anybody's listening to this and you have an idea of how to save time in FMEA meetings, Fred and I would love to hear from you.
Yep. And a great way to get in touch with us the great way to get in touch with us is at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a contact form there, and you can send your comments or ideas directly to us. So you can also find us on LinkedIn and a variety of other places where somehow, Carl, we're not hard to find.
No, that's true.
We try not to be. No, but yeah, exactly right. We'd love to hear from you. So there's a couple of tips, a couple of ideas. You should write a book on this, Carl.
Good idea, Fred.
You better put your book in the show notes, too.
Okay.
All right, cool. Well, appreciate it, Carl. Some great ideas there. I always learn something.
Yeah, thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.